ओम ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Have you all had realizations in your practices recently? Any kind of thoughts you've had or experiences? Notebook full of
them. I don't know how much of this I really want to read.
I'll just share one thought so we can, to start with.
So I was writing earlier today, meditating on this, and I wrote, Shiva is all that exists. Let me worship any god I so please. I will never worship anyone but Shiva. It is Shiva who is Krishna. It is Shiva who is Saraswati. It is Shiva who is Jesus. Let me worship my own body, but it is Shiva who is the physical world. Matter, spirit, energy, God, all this is Shiva. It is Shiva who is everyone. It is Shiva who is everything.
Thank you.
Sure.
Shiva consciousness. Shiva means auspicious. Anyone else? We've been traveling from, earlier this year. If we go to earlier this year, it's been a busy year. But recently we were in India and spent time in a place called Govardhan, which is a holy place where millions of people come during the autumn season. It's a special month for performing spiritual activities. And I stay at a monastery there where there's some seclusion. And then we spend time doing extra time hearing and chanting, meditating, and things like that. And just after that, my wife went back to California and I went to Tokyo. And there's a temple in Tokyo. And spent some time with the devotees in Tokyo. Once I was going to Japan, the first time I went there was 1979, and I was thinking this is really a new exotic place, which it is. And then as I was coming in on the airplane, I was thinking that maybe it's so different here that it doesn't have any of the characteristics of other parts of the material world, any of the anomalies. So it's so far off, and besides that, I was half asleep on the... Hare Krishna, great to see you. Half asleep on the plane, and as I came into the Narita, the Tokyo airport, I saw an overpass, and there was two ambulances going across with their lights flashing. I just sort of saw that and I thought, well, wherever you go, there's similar complications in the world. And in the Gita, Krishna talks about how he says, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punar Avartino Arjuna, from the highest planet in the material universe down to the lowest, there are complexities of birth, death, old age, and disease. It's a temporary place. So that's there. That's definitely there. You can search wherever you wish, but you'll find those kinds of anomalies. But then the Srimad Bhagavatam says that human life is very rare, and although it's temporary, it affords an opportunity to realize the highest spiritual values in life. And so it's a special window of opportunity, the human life, according to Srimad Bhagavatam. It's called Nri Deham. Nri means human, and Deham means body. And in a similar verse, it says, that the human body is like a boat. Rideham adyam sulabam sudulabam plavam sukalpam guru karnadaram. It says that the human body is a boat, and it's especially built, engineered, so that it can go across the ocean of material existence and take the passenger to the other side. And it says, in order to take the boat across the ocean of the material world, that you should have favorable winds. And the favorable winds come from the instructions of books like the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then it says you should also have a captain. You should align yourself with someone who's been across the ocean or knows how to go across, and then take help. And then it says you can easily cross the ocean of the material world with the boat. I think sometimes, too, there's a kind of a false expectation that I'll be able to find a comfortable situation in the material world. And I learned about a term that's used in marketing, that one should adjust expectations. Corporations do this when they're marketing. They try to help their customers adjust their expectations. Because if they expect too much, then once they see the product, they get disappointed. And so Krishna helps us to adjust our expectation of the material world in the Bhagavad Gita by saying it's a dukalayam shashvatam. A nalayam in Sanskrit means a place, and duk means a place of feeling uncomfortable. So dukkhalayam is a place where you feel uncomfortable. So if you expect a lot more than that, then you can be disappointed. But if you're aligned with the higher purpose of the material world, I was talking about this when we first came in, there's full facility, especially in human life, to navigate oneself out of the material world if one so wishes. And especially in the present age, according to the Vaishnav scriptures, there's a way in which there's a special dispensation in this age, a process that's very simple but profound, and especially it's mentioned as sankirtan, or this kind of chanting is very effective in elevating one to the spiritual consciousness. And it can be performed anywhere at any time. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who propagated this over 500 years ago, said that when you're singing the names of our original divine source, we named as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you're directly in touch with the spiritual energy. Even as one lives in the material world, one can become aligned with the spiritual energy by repeating the divine mantra. It keeps one in touch with the spiritual energy. And the mantra is described as being transformational. As we stay in touch with the mantra, then we naturally transform. Our mind transforms. It becomes steady-er-ish. And we also develop qualities like detachment, which means a sort of aloofness from a lot of the comings and goings that normally would disturb us. And also what is called gyan, or knowledge. And that there's a very specific definition of knowledge given in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says knowledge means the power to see the difference between matter and spirit. Because according to the Gita, each one of us, let's say, individual human being, is a mixture of matter and spirit. It's the spirit that animates the body. Whereas the body itself is a manifestation of the various elements that we actually see around us, like earth, water, fire, air, ether, and mind, which is a subtle material substance. Intelligence is also a very subtle material substance. But the soul is categorically different from those energies. And the chanting process aligns us with our higher self. And other kinds of lower vibrations align us with our physical body. And this causes anxiety because it's a misalignment with myself. This is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhayam dvitiya binibeshita syad. Dvitiya means a second thing. Dvi means two. So dvitiya means a second thing. We're actually one thing, we're spiritual, but we see ourselves as material because of misidentifying. I misidentify myself as being a physical body. Someone thinks I'm a man, someone else thinks I'm a woman, someone else thinks I'm a cat, someone else thinks I'm a dog. But actually those are only temporary coverings of the spiritual self. But by the mantra and the spiritual sound vibration, one gets knowledge. And that knowledge gives one the power to see that I'm not the body, I'm actually a spirit within the body. And I'm only occupying the body, and the situation also is tenuous. The situation of the spirit isn't tenuous, it's actually permanent and never changing. But my body is tenuous and always changing. And when I identify with it, then the verse I just quoted says, bhayam, then bhayam syat means fear arises. And the fear, the greatest fear that a living entity, a living being can have is fear of non-existence. It's the idea that who I am will cease to exist. Who I am never ceases to exist, but my idea of who I am ceases to exist. For instance, I may have an idea that I'm an American and that I'm a human being and that I have certain possessions. That's what defines me. But at some point, those will shift in another direction. They'll shift away from me. And it's disconcerting because they move away. You like the word disconcerting in that regard? Yeah, the way I have my own ideas about how I'll move in the world and which things I'll keep around me. But then when the world moves in a different direction, I take it as suffering. When those things move, when the world moves against me in rapid fashion, then I take it as a catastrophe. But actually, it's just movement. I was thinking, even the earth moves around a lot. In California, we live in earthquake area. And the last earthquake that happened shook up a lot of houses, broke a few bridges and things like that. And I was thinking afterwards that actually, unless we built bridges and buildings on top of a place that was shaky, we wouldn't have really noticed that much. I mean, if you lived in the wilderness and you lived through an earthquake, you wouldn't really be disturbed by it much because just a few things might move around. But we live in a kind of artificial way, in such a way that when the earth shakes, it moves, then the things that I've built upon it shake apart and they move and they break down, so forth. And in a similar way, my conception of who I am is brittle. And when the world moves and it appears that my whole world is shaking or breaking apart. But a self-realized person, Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, as one who isn't shaken when the world moves. And it's always moving. The Jagat is a name for the universe. Everyone say Jagat. Jagat means on the move. It's always moving. And the soul is known to be impervious to change. But when I misalign myself as with the material world and think this is my home, this is my body, and it shouldn't change, then it becomes a problem for me. And then, of course, the conception of death, which is a great topic to bring up over the holidays, especially when you go home and meet your family, and everyone wants to know what to talk about. So let's talk about death. That everyone gets all cheery. Says, yeah, lads. Daddy lads. And so, death is really a misnomer because the soul never dies. The spiritual self, the Atma, it's always existed and it always will exist. But because of my misidentification with the body, when I'm forced by time to relocate, then there's the sense that I'm dying. And what's actually dying? My attachments are dying. If I had no attachments in the world, then there would really be no fear in death. For instance, if I lose my cell phone for even half an hour, there's a lot of pain in that, even that thought. But to speak of losing, you know, all your stuff all at once. But if I'm not attached to it, it doesn't bother me. You see, it comes and goes and so forth. But my traumatic experience when I leave this world, when I leave this body, is due to my have becoming quite attached to it and the conception that this is me. So it's not really me that's dying, it's the conception that's dying. But Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that if you consider carefully that the idea of the body is, you consider the body is not one thing. It's actually many things. It's always in flux, that is. The body's changing just as much as a river's changing constantly. A river looks like one thing and you might identify it as one thing. That's the Mississippi, Mississippi. And you say, that's my river, the Mississippi. But actually, the Mississippi's never the same. It's never been the same. It's an ever-changing entity. And the same with the body. It's ever-changing. But I think of it as one thing. And to that end, Krishna says, observe how the body's always changing. You're not the same body you were 10 seconds ago, something else. But I identify it as something permanent. And so he says there's childhood, then there's youth, middle age, adolescence, middle age, old age, and so forth. And he said, just as we change from these various periods in life, then we similarly change at the time of death. It's a similar kind of change. And we move into another location. And then in the Gita, Krishna talks about how we assume various forms and situations according to the force of our own consciousness. So we develop a kind of consciousness in any given period of time, any lifetime, according to our association. Whomever we associate with helps to develop our conception of life and the mode that we live in. These modalities are very important aspects of Krishna's teachings in the Bhagavad Gita, that there are various levels of vibration in the world. There's very high vibration, which is called sattva. Please say sattva. And then rajas, which means a very active mode, which one can experience when there's unlimited longings and desires, when you get something that you've been hankering for and then you want more. That's a symptom of rajas. And then tamas means inertia or the inability to move, absence of knowledge, absence of light. And these modalities are always mixing in this world. From sattva, one can have clearer vision. From sattva, one can distinguish between oneself and the body, between matter and spirit. And in rajas, it's very hard to see anything except for my prospects for immediate gain, immediate or long-term gain. But I'm thinking in terms of how to improve my situation in this world. And from tamas, I'm ineffectual. Have you ever felt ineffectual? Have you ever been in your house and you realize you need to clean it up, but you can't get out of the chair? That's a kind of a symptom of tamas. There's a sock on the floor. I need to pick it up. I don't know if I can make it that far. These modalities can be observed, but our consciousness, although originally pure, gets covered over by these various modalities, and we become conditioned by them. And according to the kind of conditioning one has when one leaves this present body, material nature, which is 100% accommodating, it's not punishing, but it's accommodating. It's accommodating my own wishes, desires, and the way in which I've prepared my consciousness. And it exactly accommodates whatever type of consciousness I've developed by my own associations in a given period of time, in a lifetime. So Krishna says in the Gita that whatever is the subject matter that most attracts you when you're leaving this body, you'll be accommodated with that in your next life. And then liberation from this cycle means to attain a full awareness that I'm not a material entity at all, but I'm a spiritual entity. And that spiritual entity has a dharma. A dharma means a natural characteristic, just as sugar is sweet, isn't it? If you taste sugar that's not sweet, what do you think? Bogus sugar. Either that or you have jaundice. So similarly, the dharma of the Atma is service to the original divine source, Krishna. And so bhakti yoga means to cultivate, or should say rekindle, that original dharma that's there within the soul. Therefore, it's a non-sectarian process. It's a process through which, by which anyone can experience one's original nature, original dharma. And primarily, that begins with what's called shravanam kirtanam. Everyone please say shravanam kirtanam. So shravanam means hearing, and kirtanam means chanting. And the more that one tunes in to spiritual sound vibration, and all that's really required is putting oneself in proximity so that one can hear it, the more that the consciousness becomes reoriented towards the higher spiritual self. And then as one hears, one naturally gains the ability to repeat what one's heard. And one's speech begins to reform. And this is an important aspect of spiritual life that is mentioned by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. He says there's a way in which our speech is a powerful force in our spiritual practice. There's a verse in the Padma Purana that says, Atashi Krishna Madi Nabaved Graimindriye Seva Mukihi Jivado Swayameva Spuratida. Amazingly, that yoga begins with the tongue. One might think, can the tongue do downward dog? Well, it can, but that's not what's meant by the verse exactly. What's really meant is that the tongue is the gateway to the other senses. Although the mind is the central point at which all the other senses meet, it's called the sense within, the tongue is like the rudder. It directs the way we go in life. And the kind of speech that we employ in our life not only indicates our level of consciousness, but it becomes a catalyst for how our consciousness will change. And therefore, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita recommends that we reform our speech. And one of the ways to do that is through mantra. Mantra is the perfect utilization of the human tongue to repeat divine sounds which connect us to our spiritual self. And by doing that on a regular basis, one can then see within oneself the original consciousness, which is called Krishna consciousness. That's why our founder called this the International Light for Krishna Consciousness. It's kind of, in a sense, redundant, because just like when you say shine, you actually mean sun, because all the light in this universe comes from the sun. So to say sunshine, you could make a case that it's redundant. So Krishna consciousness, you could also make a case that it's slightly redundant, but it's to orient us towards where consciousness comes from. This consciousness comes from the original source of all consciousness. And the name for that in Sanskrit is Krishna. And so we say Krishna consciousness. So this simple process given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Bhakti can be practiced at home. And one can make tangible advancement by taking a little time, especially in the morning, if possible, to repeat the mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra. And one of the techniques for meditating deeply on the mantra is so simple it may sound elusive. But that technique is to repeat the mantra and to be aware that you're repeating the mantra. Because as soon as one starts meditation, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a way in which the mind will drift to other places. And even while one's chanting the mantra, one may be thinking of something else. Like what?
Gotta feed the dog.
Gotta feed the dog. Work.
Dinner.
Everything. Yeah, it could go to anywhere and everywhere. So Krishna says in the Gita, the technique of meditation is wherever the mind goes, practice bringing it back. And meditation is meant to have an object. You'll find in the Yoga Sutra that you have to meditate on something. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended meditate on the sound of the mantra, because the sound itself is spiritual. And it's rather mystifying how spiritual it is. And if you can enter into a kind of a trance, and that is wondering at the mysterious nature of the mantra as you're hearing it, and just be fully present in listening to the mantra and wondering at it, this is a good practice of meditation, good session. What's that? Really? Do you have any reflections? Reflections means anything that I said that's stuck in your mind. Those are much easier than questions. I was just given the 2-minute warning. Yes?
I just recall you mentioning something about the phone and how we're attached to the phone, and I had this experience for the first time a couple of weeks ago where while I was at work, and while my phone was running out, I noticed that my power cord no longer worked. And so I actually felt like I was suffocating. And I ran to the Staples and bought a new cord. And I thought, what is wrong with me? I mean, what does this phone, it has so much power over me that I actually felt like I was going to have trouble breathing because I didn't have any power.
Yeah, and it's a good example. There's a way in which we invest our self into matter, or we project ourselves into material objects, and then they change from being just objects into my objects, and then I develop a relationship with them. And so bhakti and the practice of yoga is meant to help sort that out. When I don't have that connection to the material world, in other words, I see it as moving, but I'm separate from it. This is described as one of the aspects of being liberated. even as one's within the material body, one sees it going on as a mechanical process. For instance, a digestion is enacted automatically as much as a dishwasher. When you put in the soap and close the door, then it goes. It has its cycle. And I know very little about dishwashers. I just know that they go where they're supposed to go. And I know very little bit about digestion, but I live with a digesting machine all the time, and it just goes. And similarly, all the processes in the biological robot that I live in are carried out by a higher force that I have nothing to do with. They're involuntary. And so this kind of cultivation of introspection and realization that I'm a mechanical, the body is a biologically mechanical entity, and that I'm categorically different from that. Consciousness is different. And that can be thought about, but also one can realize it directly by the power of the mantra. This is the idea. So by chanting, and then also highly recommended hearing from Bhagavad Gita and books like Srimad Bhagavatam, because they're so precise in the way they describe one's interaction with material nature and the nature of higher consciousness, that one can then identify the world as for what it is, rather than seeing it for what it's not. And that is my place of residence eternally. And I guess I just kept going and going, and then I came to the end of my time, which is really sad. But in any case, I like this place, because this is really where this kind of size room and this kind of size group and this kind of group, I mean all of you, this is the laboratory where one actually can purify the consciousness most readily. Sometimes assemblies become too large or unwieldy. It's nice when you're able to have relationships with the people on a regular basis that you're talking to. And just by going through discussion on a regular basis of the spiritual topics and also chanting together in this size room and group, and especially it's a little detached, no one knows where this house is. No one can find you here. If you ever want to hide from the government or anything, you just come stay here. They'll never find you in Catonsville in this house. And it's always nice to find a spiritual place. It's called vivikta. It means a secluded place where no one can get at you. You need a fortress so you can go deeply within your practice. So you have something very special here. And you have everything to take. Everything you need is available in this room in order to come to the perfectional stage of consciousness. So I'm really excited for you all, and I feel sorry for myself that I can't spend more time here in this environment. And I'll be counting the days until I can come back and be with you again. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Thanks for coming. Eric came for the first time to this program. Welcome. Is anybody else here for the first time? You're for the first time too. Welcome. And the rest of you with notebooks and everything like that, I guess you've been here before. Okay.
Chariyar Marman, Nachariyar Marman, Nachariyar Marman, Nachariyar Marman, hey! Nachariyar Marman, Nachariyar Marman, Nachariyar Marman, Nachariyar Marman.